This is Jerry Pippin, and this is a special report. Politics and the media, how they work together hand in hand. Former police reporter Jim Mars.
Well, let me give you another example of how that we've been blindsided here and have been kept in the dark. When I started my career as a newspaper reporter, as a police reporter, I would run with the cops. Sometimes I'd ride with the cops. Talk about your embedded journalist.
Right.
And I'd wear a trench coat and a little fedora hat, and I'd run right in there with them, and it was usually just me and a pencil and a notepad. And I'd go into crime scenes. I've been into the homicide scene, stepped over the bodies, the blood, suicides, plane crash. And then, again, over the course of my career, what happened was, the next thing you know, there's three or four or five radio reporters with tape recorders, and they're all wanting in. Well, they can't let everybody in. The next thing you know, there's TV crews. Once they got TV cameras that were mobile enough to be able to carry them around with you, now they're there. They want in. They got a light guy and a sound guy. And pretty soon, there's 25, 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can't allow them to go tromping around in a crime scene, so they had to keep everybody out. Before long, they had that damn yellow tape, you know, and they
pushed
it around everything, kept you off. And now that tape, they push you back 12, 14 blocks, in the case of Waco, 2 miles, and nobody can see what's going on. And when you get that kind of situation, like on normal circumstances, let's say there's a barroom shooting. Okay, so the reporter waits down the block until the police spokesman comes and says, okay, we got one person killed, his name was blah, 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 and gives the facts. And in that situation, you're probably okay. But when it gets to something of the magnitude and political, then that's just not any good, because they can come out and from behind the yellow tape and tell us any cover story they want to. And unless we're allowed to examine the evidence for ourselves, how are we going to be able to know whether that's right or wrong?
I've really wanted to do a show on how the press, the media, and politicians work together hand in hand, sometimes not even knowing how they scratch each other's back. We have invited Mike Miller to join us. Mike is a longtime personal friend. He's a TV anchor of some renown in Little Rock and also Tulsa. Was a TV reporter in Washington, D.C. for several years. Became involved in politics, as always, because he was an anchor and also a reporter, and politics was his beat. In addition, Mike decided that maybe he should go over to the other side of the fence. In other words, go to the political side and work as a press secretary, handling press relations. So he's the perfect guy to present, and he has a book out that I recommend highly. It's an autobiography of his work as a TV anchor and also as a political person, mainly as a press secretary for some major Republican politicians. The name of the book is How High Can I Stoop? It's available on Amazon and a few other places as well, and we have links to it from the Mike Miller page on our website. First of all, Mike, since we last talked, you've moved to Florida.
Yeah, finally retired down here where all the retirees are, trying to keep busy and finding that after an interesting life, a career in radio and TV and politics, it's life is rather dull.
Bored, Mike Miller, maybe you need to write another book.
I don't know. That was the hardest thing I think I've ever done. It took months, and then I'd have really been lost without a computer. When I started writing it, there weren't computers. And fortunately, I made a lot of notes along the way, which was very helpful, but without spell check and all the other stuff and the internet and being able to research things and confirm things and spellings and all that, it would have been impossible with a typewriter.
And Mike, you know, it's funny how quickly we take things for granted. I mean, I don't know how we did it without computers. I mean, we had stacks of paper everywhere, typing on the old typewriter constantly.
I could have had a passing grade in school if I'd had a computer.
Where did you go to school? Tulsa?
Yeah, I went to Catholic school, Marquette, and then 4 years at University of Tulsa. Studied radio TV production, worked on KWGS, the old FM station.
It's still there. It's still cooking.
Right. It was the first FM, I think, at least one of the first ones in Tulsa.
No, I think you're right about that.
Yeah. It was a good place to make your initial mistakes.
Now, you worked at all three television stations, I think, in Tulsa as an anchor.
Yes. I may be the only one who's ever anchored the news on all three of the major affiliates.
Yeah, it'd be a little more difficult now. Everybody wants a non-compete clause, exclusivity, stuff like that.
And the only way you could ever get a raise...
It was leave.
...is to leave, yeah. I mean, contracts... I don't know if they have contracts or unions. I doubt it. But they didn't have contracts or unions. In fact, if you mentioned the word union, you were probably out the door real quick.
Now, your dad was a local celebrity in Tulsa, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
He had a dance studio?
Yeah, for those familiar with Tulsa, East 15th Street had a row of dance schools, and Lou Miller Dance Studio, he started that, oh gosh, must have been in the late 30s, early 40s. And he taught so many people, so many kids, and they grew up and had kids, and he taught them, and they grew up and had kids, and he taught them. When I would walk around with him in downtown Tulsa or someplace, people would come up to him on the street. Yeah, everybody knew him. And I could not believe how many people knew him from the dancing school.
Well, Mike, I remember him well. He was quite the Mr. Showbiz in Tulsa.
He was a theatrical booking agent. He and Sam Avey, they started Hey Rube. It was an organization back during World War II that entertained the troops. And they had, oh, gosh, Joe Lindy's band. They borrowed a bus from one of the bands in Tulsa, and they had the singers. One of the singers was Patti Page, worked for $5 a show. They had a comedian, magician, a line of girls.
Yeah, Mike, we have a link over to an interview we did with you some time back in which we talked about the entertainment business in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of all places, and your career in television there. But tonight, I thought we would flesh that out a little bit and expand it and talk about, your TV career. I mean, you ended up in Washington, D.C.
That's the place to be. That's like the major leagues, I think.
And then, later, you became a political consultant.
Well, you know, after 20 years in the news media, being fired numerous times and hired numerous times, I decided to get into something more stable, like politics. And I happened to be in Little Rock at the time. The guy I was working for there at Channel 11 was just one of the meanest people I've ever met and worked for. He had a terrible temper, and I knew my days were numbered, so I started looking around before the axe fell and hooked up with Ed Bethune, who was running for Congress, I became his press secretary. Ed was 50 points behind his Democratic opponent on the 4th of July when I went to work for him, and we pulled it off. It was quite an upset. He was the first Republican in that seat. That's the old Wilbur Mills Little Rock district,
mm-hmm.
in 103 years. So it was quite an accomplishment.
Wow, Mike Miller, Mr. Magic Man. How did you do that? How did you get that much of a gain? How did Ed pick up that many votes?
Well, Bethune, number one, was one of the smartest people I've ever worked for. I was toying. I was also being interviewed, but Bill Clinton was elected governor. He was going to be governor. He hadn't been sworn in yet.
Yeah, he had been Attorney General in Arkansas.
I didn't know which one to work for. I was non-political at this point. I just kind of vote for the band, you know. And growing up in Tulsa, when I was old enough to vote, registered Democrat because you could vote in primaries. If you were a Republican, they never had any primary opposition, so you never got to, you know, voice your choices. But anyway,
things have changed.
Yeah, I had actually met with Clinton. We had a bar. We had a couple of drinks, and he said, "I could use you after I'm elected governor, but not until then." He was going to have, he said, about five media people on his staff, and I had a feeling that he had higher political ambitions than just to be governor of Arkansas. But anyway, I needed something immediately, so as I say, on the 4th of July, I went to work with for Ed Bethune as his press secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happened was we caught our opponent flip-flopping a lot. He would tailor his remarks to different groups. You know, he'd be for abortion at one group and then like pro-life at another group. And, you know, he would, on about five or six different issues, we actually got him on tape flip-flopping and played him both all the flip-flops for the media. And that put him on the defensive, and he didn't want to debate because, as he announced one time, in a debate you'd have to take a position on a bunch of issues and I'd make you mad and you wouldn't vote for me. Fortunately, I had my tape recorder going, and we used that little comment in a radio commercial in the last week of the campaign, and it blew him out of the water.
So now you're back on your way to Washington, D.C., and this time as press secretary for a congressman.
Well, I stayed with him for this first term, and then he was his press secretary. He took me to Washington. That was my second trip to Washington. And then we had a falling out, or I had a falling out with his chief of staff, his administrative assistant. When during the campaign, I'd worked directly with Ed. You know, a press secretary should work with the member of Congress directly. They shouldn't have to go through somebody else. And that was very unwieldy. And so we clashed, and I left, and I went to work for the senatorial committee for 2 years.
And what did you do there?
I was the deputy director of communications, and they, because of my media background, they made me a media troubleshooter. And they'd send me into various campaigns, and I'd assist their media operation. And most of them were really poor, so it was easy to make a lot of recommendations. Some of them didn't even have a press list or a media list to send out press releases. And the press releases they sent out were an embarrassment with a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Errors,
you know, Mike, that's really one of the things that stands out about changing nature of politics. It's the fact that press secretaries weren't all that important back in those days to many of the candidates.
Much higher.
Kind of an afterthought. But now that's a key person. I guess image is everything now.
So one of the places that I ended up, and they, as we got close to the, as the campaigns heated up closer to the election, we sent people out into every campaign that had a chance, and they sent me to Nevada, and I hooked up with a guy named Chick Hecht, who was a long shot there.
Mike, actually, that turned out to be a pretty good job for you. I mean, you had a lot of perks here in Las Vegas. Got to go out there a lot. In fact, we talked about that a lot when we did our live shows.
Ted Binion case.
You know, it was another long shot. You're building quite a reputation here.
Oh, wow. He was running against Howard Cannon. I don't know if that name rings a bell.
Oh, sure, I know. I remember Howard Cannon. He owned Las Vegas, owned Nevada.
But he was a long-time Senate.
Couldn't be beat.
Fixture there. And I think he got kind of dusted up by the Teamsters Union scandals were going on. I don't think he got directly involved, but he was close enough to hurt him politically a little bit. And it was an interesting thing about that race is that Paul Laxalt was the senior senator, or he, I guess he was a junior senator at that time, and but very close to Chick, because Chick had been in the legislature. That's his only previous experience, political experience. Laxalt had been governor, and they were close. Laxalt said, on election eve, he said, they're going to try to steal it from you. He ran against Cannon before, and I think Cannon beat him by something like 4 votes. It was unbelievable. But there was a lot of shenanigans that he warned us about, so Chick sent me out to these, like, 8 precincts that Laxalt said were going to be shenanigans going on, and my jaw dropped when I saw what was going on, that these same people were voting at these different precincts. I mean, a big fat woman with a flowered dress and a big hat, you know, you'd see her at one, then you'd go to another precinct and she'd vote there, and then go to another precinct and she'd vote there. And people would take voters into the voting booth. They didn't have to show anything. And then they would point to where they were supposed to vote. You know, and then he came around and congratulated everybody. It was kind of bad. Anyway, we pulled it off, and Chick took me to Washington. Well, I just stayed in Washington, but when at least I had a job, and the senatorial committee, those are just temporary jobs. They change when a new director comes in. So I was happy to work for him, and work for him for his entire.
So how long were you with Chick Heck?
6 years. And a little more, considering the, if you took into account the...
So now Mike Miller is press secretary again, but this time for a senator.
Right. And the thing about it is, what really beat him, well, the several things, I think. Number one, a very popular governor ran against him. And the thing about it is, he was weakened, I think. Number one, he'd made some gaffes. His biggest gaffe was he referred, you know, you're familiar with the nuclear repository.
Yes, uh-huh.
Put in Yucca Mountain, Nevada. Very unpopular. But Chick once, in an interview in a Reno TV station, referred to it as the nuclear suppository. And none of us even caught it at the time. Of course, it was replayed on all kinds of TV shows, and then featured among other gaffes he allegedly, some he had said, some he hadn't. The Wall Street Journal ran a front page story that just, it was devastating. And that hurt. And so anyway, he lost. And it was a close race. So I went to back, I was out of a job when he was out of a job. I wanted to mention one thing about Chick before we leave him. He was eating in the senator's dining room. You may have read this. And he choked on a piece of meat. And Senator John Kerry was sitting next to him and put him in the Heimlich maneuver and saved his life. And then Chick died a few years ago. And John Kerry spoke at his funeral.
That points out one thing that's really changed, really, Mike, and that's the camaraderie of the Senate. Yeah, actually, even both the House as well. Today, they're liable to, you know, some member of the other party is choking. They're liable to let him do it. I may be exaggerating a little, but it's no longer a place where people get along.
People were much more cordial. And this was in the 80s when I worked on the Hill last, and they would socialize after work, go out and have drinks or dinner. It didn't matter. Even our next door neighbor in the next office was a guy named Mitch Daniels. He was working for Senator Lugar from Indiana. He was just a staffer. Now he's governor of the state. But we were all socializing with, of course, he was Republican, but when I was working for Bethune, our next door neighbor was Ozzie Myers, who got caught up in the Abscam scandal.
Yeah, I remember that.
Taking kickbacks. He's a Democrat. He was a wild man. And a lot of drinking and partying going on. But anyway, after Chick, I had to get a job, so I got a freelance job at the local TV station up there, Channel 9, which was a CBS affiliate, WUSA, and as a news writer, terrible pay. And the unions did not treat freelance news writers with any respect at all. So I had a call from a friend of mine that I used to work with at the senatorial committee who said, I play tennis with a guy that can use a press secretary and that he's not a mental giant by any means. And his name is Jim Inhofe. He was a congressman at the time. And I had interviewed Inhofe when he was in the Oklahoma legislature. I'd remembered him.
Yeah, he's also mayor at one time.
He was mayor of Tulsa, although I wasn't there at the time. I knew he was a pilot. I saw a picture of him flying a biplane over Tulsa and waving.
Yeah, I don't know how good of a pilot he is. He's had, I think, 3 plane crashes, maybe 4.
Yeah, I don't know how good a pilot he is, but I knew that he was so right-wing that he probably flew in circles.
Mike Miller, I love that joke, especially coming from you since you're a Republican.
Well, you know, I guess I've been a Republican now for quite a while, since the 70s, but I'm not really, I'm more of a pragmatic Republican, for one. I'm not wedded to all these Tea Party ideas of my way or the highway, don't compromise and all that stuff. I think it's...
Well, I think you can figure out where this show's going. We're going to reveal lots of information about the press and its relationship with politicians. Coming up on the next part of our show, we're going to deal with Senator James Inhofe and a few others, revealing what they do know and what they don't know. The American political circus, has it been captured by those who not only don't care about issues, but don't care to be informed? It appears that students in America are not the only ones that have been dumbed down. This is Politics in the Press. I'm Jerry Pippin.